state.
It is. It is. Actually, I was trafficked in New Hampshire.
Did you only look like you're about 18 years old, for goodness gracious.
Thank you so much. I love genetics and cosmetics.
Evidently, man, you'd never know. All right, you want to just take us a little bit of a journey on how that started? Because is your story any different from the youth that may be going through that today?
I actually think it's quite common. We have about, statistics show that 80 to 90% of sex trafficking adults were sexually abused as children. And that's part of my story, too. My mom married her rapist. He said he'd ruined her and no one else would ever want her. So she married him thinking things would change. He was dodging the draft at the time, so he wasn't around very often. But when he was, he attacked her. So after 2 years and on the verge of suicide, she called her mom and she said, if you don't get me out of here, I'm going to kill myself. And so she did separate from him and she married someone else and he adopted us. But for some reason I'll never understand, they sent us back, my sister and me, to my paternal grandmother's house where she gave him access to us. And so we were molested from early childhood.
Holy Toledo. Not the most uplifting story on a Tuesday morning, right? But I got to tell you, and we're going to go through the, what's brought you into your life now. And first and foremost is that the time that you had to go through that to deal with it, to be able to get up on the other side, must have been a brutal walk for you, no? I can't even imagine what you've gone through. And this all took place here?
Yes, and right over the border in Massachusetts. So I was a border brat back and forth for a lot of years. My grandmother was up here in New Hampshire. My mother's husband was down in Massachusetts. She left him. She divorced him when I was about 11 years old. And so we lived in Haverhill, and I was able to stop going to my paternal grandmother's house, but that left me vulnerable in the neighborhood. And so a really handsome bodybuilder came to my neighborhood, jet black hair. He had the quintessential pimp car. He had a black Lincoln Continental with red interior, and everything about him sparkled. Everything was so shiny. He never had a scratch on his car. He came to the neighborhood pretending to be friendly with everyone. And I didn't know I was being targeted. I just thought he was a friendly guy with everybody in the neighborhood. And, of course, it's New England, so it was cold. And it wasn't too long that summer of my 13th year before I was in his car. And not long after that, I was in his bed. And he talked to me a bit about getting the things that I needed. I didn't have boots. And, you know, we were very poor at the time. It was during the Great Recession. And I at first said, no, I'm fine. I don't need that stuff. But on my 14th birthday, my mom came home from running some errands. And it was my birthday. And I was standing there really all excited and on the other end of the table. And we had been fighting because I had been acting out. I mean, with all the molestation and the trauma that I had suffered as a kid, as a little kid, I was running away. I was doing drugs. I was kicking the windows out of the bus stop, just all kinds of crazy stuff. Anything I could do to act out. So we were fighting. I was stealing from her.
Let me reintroduce you. Darlene Pollack is in the studio this morning on WSMN 1590, conceived and raped, trafficked, and born again in the studio. Did you have a sister at that time, too?
I did. My sister lived with my mother's mother.
How was she younger than you? Older?
She was a year and a half younger than me.
Okay, so first and foremost, I can just tell, and we're going to try to use the stories that she's going to today for those of you out there that have parents to understand that the times may change, but your daughter might be in the same position psychologically. You were very naive, though, too, even though things were troubling in you. So this probably turned on to you as this is just a friendly person trying to give me the things I need and make me feel better when the stuff I'm not getting at home.
Right. He pretended to be my friend and told me that I could have the things that I needed if I just have sex with other guys like I was having with him, like it was no big deal.
Right. And this is the first time in your life at that age right there that, maybe some type of even the talk of sexuality was coming into your life at that age? Were you familiar or knew things about it or not knew things about it?
Well, my father had been molesting me in increasingly deviant ways as a small child. So and at 13, my mom had people coming in and out of the house. So one of her brothers molested me.
Jeez, Louise, you're killing me here. how does that predator pick up on the vulnerability of a person like that?
I always say I think we have an invisible V right on our forehead for them to find, but I'm sure that it's easy enough to spot someone who's vulnerable in that way. I was hanging around the neighborhood out of school, just not having any direction, not having anything to occupy my time.
Mm. And okay, so this first introduction of the meeting with this person was around 13. And how did that take place again? How did he find you?
So he came to my neighborhood pretending to look for some friend of his. And I say pretending.
So he had to see you before that. He had to have found out where your neighborhood was.
I think he was just hanging around various neighborhoods because okay. He had a queue. I wasn't the only girl that he sold that way.
Oh, so he had multiple, even at this time when you were just getting introduced. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Whew. Okay, so, you know, he's befriending you. How long does this go on for here?
It was probably between 6 and 8 months before my birthday. So it was the early part of the summer and then through the summer. And my birthday's in the middle of January.
Which would have been your 14th birthday.
My 14th birthday.
Did he take you? Were you able to go home? Or where you were living, or did he finally just take your mine now?
No, I actually went home. I would sneak out at night and meet him down in a back alley where he would sell me to the illegal gambling participants.
When you look back now, what was it that kept you going back there?
He gave me drugs and a little bit of money, and it was...
Enough, like a carrot at the end of a conveyor belt, right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there was one doctor who bought me and took me to a nice home here in New Hampshire, and he asked me why I was doing this, and I just shrugged my shoulders and said, well, it's something to do. I literally felt like I had nothing to do and nothing to
when
live
did
for.
You, how old were you when you talked to that doctor, though?
I was 14. That was 14 years old, yeah.
Now, when you were doing this for those months right there, did you see any other girls? Was this just mainly females? Were there any boys involved?
Not that I knew of.
Okay.
Not.
Did you meet other girls that were this guy's friends or whatever you guys were called? Or
yeah.
Whatever?
After a while, he got an apartment through another man and had the three of us living there.
Okay, so then your 14th birthday comes on. It goes into the next part here. Now, you're not only, this whole thing's taking place. Now you're about ready to be sold into prostitution.
Well, he sold me on my 14th birthday for the first time. So after my mom came home from running some errands, I stood at the other end of the table and said, it's my birthday. And she just gave me a dirty look and threw two crumpled up dollars on the table. And I was devastated because it was my birthday. I knew we were fighting and everything, but I still thought that I should get something for my birthday.
Sure.
And, that's when I called him. I called him that afternoon, and I stood outside in 3 inches of slush that was coming up over my sneakers, and it was a really gray, overcast day, and I was at a three-way intersection, and I just stood there thinking, I wonder if anyone could see me.
And folks, this is here in this state. You want to read more about her, you can. TheDarlingPrincess.com is the website. Her name is Darlene Pollock. She's a pro-life speaker now. And just going through her little journey here. Okay, so how long were you being sold out in prostitution after your 14th birthday when it first started?
Just to make a little correction, that day would happen to be in Haverhill when I was sold to a businessman from New Hampshire, but
right.
It was... I was in
Haverhill. And did this continue?
It did continue. When I was 17 and a half, I was sold to one man as a house pet.
So what? From 14, don't make me get angry. I want to pop people in the head. You're getting me angry. From 14 to 17, you were being, did you know?
Did I know it was wrong?
Yeah, well, not wrong or just whatever feeling is, like I'm, whatever.
I was floating. I felt like I was floating downstream and... sort of in a life I didn't even own.
And at first, maybe felt like, well, this is just what I do, just like you told the doctor, just, you know, just something that
yep.
I do. Okay, all right.
Yep.
And you went on, did you have to have any abortions during that time?
I did not have any abortions. I, as far as I know, I did not get pregnant. And when I was sold at 17 to this one man, he had taken me to a detective's home before. The apartment was rented in the name of a sheriff in that town, so I felt like I didn't really have any place to go.
Whoa,
but
whoa, wait a minute here.
At least there weren't any more rapes. There weren't any more beatings. There weren't any more getting thrown out of the car on the side of the road, that sort of thing. There was a lot of violence involved in that 3.5 years.
Jay Lake Toledo, God bless you. Wait a minute. Who sold you? Did you get sold to a detective or a cop or something?
No. He was a small businessman, but he knew a lot of the city officials. I had been sold to a city councilman before, and so I knew he was connected with city officials and police and that sort of thing. But he was also connected as a Shylock to the illegal gambling. I actually held the mortgage of a man who was so afraid of him, he gave him the mortgage to his house, his family home. That's how dangerous he was. But I felt like, even though it was dangerous, I was feeling like I was on the right side of a gun.
Yeah, of course. Understand. Yeah. Understood, yep.
So he told me if I got pregnant, I would have to have an abortion. But I hadn't been pregnant yet. It had been 5 years of being passed around consistently. So I agreed, and I moved in. And, of course, I got pregnant. And When he came in and I told him I was pregnant, he said, "Well, did you make an appointment for an abortion?" And I threw myself at his feet and I just begged him, crying and saying, "Please don't make me do this. I promise I won't tell anyone." I just didn't want to do that.
And this is the person that you were sold to at 17.
Yeah, yeah. And he basically slammed his fist on the arm of the couch. You know those old couches that are velour with the, like, the woodland scene on it, and they've got wooden arms.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like that. So he slammed it down really hard, and he said, "I want no life." And it shot through me.
I want what?
I want no life. I want no life were the words that he said. And people say when I tell them that that's not imaginative. And I say, well, it was demonic. How could it be imaginative? The devil doesn't create anything.
He was shouting that to you knowing that you were pregnant.
Yep. Yeah, he had told me before that he had forced other girls to have abortions, so I knew that he was going to make me do it. He said he would kill me if I didn't have an abortion. He had a friend that was an abortionist, or a doctor anyway. I don't know if he was actually an abortionist.
This was a high-profile person.
He was pretty scary, and I made the appointment in his presence with him breathing over my shoulder, and somehow I fell asleep that night, and through my sobs, I just fell asleep, and I had a dream of the abortion procedure in living color. So I had left school in the sixth grade. I had no education beyond the sixth grade. I did not have any real knowledge of what pregnancy looked like or what the baby would have looked like at that time. But in my dream, I saw exactly what it would have looked like, stubby little fingers. I saw half a face. I saw a little rib cage.
Had you seen anything like this before?
I had never. That's what I'm saying. I left school in the sixth grade. You don't learn that stuff that early.
And there was no internet, or no. You could just go look at videos or anything?
Absolutely. Huh? You know, it was a supernatural dream. It was 1984. There was definitely no internet, very little, like I said, education I didn't have. So I woke up from that dream and I threw my arms up in the air and I said, "God, if you're real, I need you to show up. I need you to show up on this. I can't do that. I'm going to die. I'm going to die." And I would have died because my life didn't matter to me. I had attempted suicide numerous times. I had hung myself in a jail cell. I'd overdosed on pills. I'd tried to throw myself off a building. I hitchhiked all over across the country one time. And I just didn't care about myself. So I would rather have died. But I remembered a social worker who had been my key tracker when I was a runaway. And I called the social services, the Department of Health and Human Services, and she didn't work there anymore. But the woman on the phone must have heard my desperation because she said, "Give me your phone number." And I don't know how long it was exactly before her name is Anthony, called me back. But she called me back.
Darlene Pawlik is with us this morning, pro-life speaker, conceived in rape, and she was trafficked. We're going through the story right now. She's live inside the studio. The website's www.thedarlingprincess.com on WSMN 1590. Okay, carry on with that. So you got a call right back.
I did, and so I met her for coffee, and we devised a plan. I, at that time, did not think that I could get away from him. Like I said, he was connected with the police and city officials, and I just didn't think I could get away from him.
You're probably feeling like I'm going to die either way.
I'm going to die either way. And the thing that strikes me now is that today, girls that are trafficked really can't. There's facial recognition software everywhere. There's cameras everywhere. There's really no place for them to go. If they feel like they're stuck, that's because they're stuck. It's very difficult to get away from traffickers today. I felt that way then, but now looking back, I realize that I could have gotten away. But trafficked kids today feel that way with much more reason. There are safe houses. There's only four in New England, but there are safe houses and places for them to go. If you're out there and you're being trafficked and you're in a situation where you feel like you can't get away, trust me, you can get away. Get in touch with me. Go to the website. My contact information is there. You can also call Polaris, which is 888-3737-888. You can get away, but I didn't think I could at the time.
So in 1984, you're battling this thing. You woke up from a wicked dream, that insight into something you had never seen before. All right, next move.
So he came to pick me up for dinner that night, and he didn't come all the way into the apartment. I was standing there shaking and crying. He said, "Are you ready?" So I grabbed my coat, and I got in the car, and we drove down to Boston, which was something we frequently did. All the way down to Boston, I told him how terrible the procedure was and how I couldn't do this anymore. And
you told him about the dream?
I didn't tell him about the dream. I told him I had gone through with the procedure.
Oh, yes, that's correct. You did.
I faked.
Okay, so you told, yeah, like you had already been through one.
Right. So I was able to use all the emotions from the dream to convince him that I had had.
Well, that's an amazing thing. You were able to do that.
I told you it was a supernatural dream. It was incredible.
But his heart to be moved to listen.
Yep. Yep. But he had had that experience when he forced other girls to have abortions, their relationship broke down. And so he let them go. So in the back of my mind, I knew that if I could convince him,
yeah,
he would let me
he
go.
He liked you.
Yeah. Well, he also,
I mean, he had to buy into something because he's figuring to himself, I'm going to lose another one.
Right. But he wanted his victims to be very compliant. Very compliant.
Whew. Okay, so he had to cave. He said...
He did. All the way down to Boston, he said nothing. But on the way back, he said, I'm going to let you go, but if you come back to this city, you're mine.
Oh, my gosh, what a miracle.
Yep. When I left that car, I didn't know... I didn't. When I got into the car, I didn't know if he'd had me followed, if he knew that I hadn't been to the clinic. I didn't know all the way down. But when I left the car, I still didn't know.
Well, yeah.
I was still nervous. Sure. It actually took years for me to really believe that I was free from him.
You had that baby.
I did have that baby. She's here in New Hampshire. She owns a salon on Second Street.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to assume here, because I don't know your story, and I'm learning it like everybody else. This was the beginning of
a long healing process.
You aren't out of it yet, though. All you do is just get out of the guy's car and felt a little bit of relief, but thinking, oh, man, this is going to backfire. So what did you do? Did you run? Did you?
So Anthe found a home for unwed mothers for me down in Massachusetts.
This is a social worker lady?
The social worker. Mm. Her name is Anthe.
She called you back.
She called me back, right? And she found a home for unwed mothers for me, and it's still there today. It's actually now an established home in Quincy. It's called Friends of the Unborn. Mm-hmm. And there we learned how, and I say we because she just opened her home up to a few girls. There were four of us living in her basement in two rooms. We were, oh my gosh, what a mess we were, fighting all the time, vomiting all the time, fighting about who's going to clean the bathroom because we're vomiting all the time. I mean, it was such a mess.
Did that happen almost instantly from you getting out of that apartment and going to that?
Yeah, I went directly to her house.
Okay, so you're being hunted too now.
Well, I didn't know. As far as I knew, yes, I didn't know if he.
I would think that guy's looking for you.
Well, he said he let me go. So as far as I knew, he let me go, and he.
But the person that was selling you, what about that guy?
Yeah, I don't know. He's the one that I thought was going to come after me for sure. Okay. He had beat me up numerous times.
All right, so the door to the new life opens from this young lady that opened the door to you, and that has got to be just as much of a hellish ride as the one getting into it.
Well, I was able, because I was pregnant, to put all of my energy into learning how to be a good parent. I did parenting classes before I even had the baby. I started to work toward getting my GED, got my GED before I had her. I started school as a certified nurse's aide 2 weeks after she was born. So I really focused all of my attention that I could on
From the outside in, I know, when you're in a thing, you can do a thing. When you're on the outside looking at something, it's like, how is it possible that you were able to get that out of your mind? The child was a blessing. to deter you. You've been a nurse for 26 years.
Yes, I was.
Okay, so... You know, you have that baby. I mean, how did you get up on your own 2 feet or for someone to help you to get into a place that you could stay when you finally look, this is the first time from your story, you're on your own.
I mean,
you got help, but
I did get help. So my grandmother, my mother's mother, took me in and I lived with her for a little more than a year. And then I moved into an apartment by myself after I had my nursing degree and I started working for the agency.
Were you constantly looking over your shoulder when you got that place that someone's, whoever's looking for me, man?
Yeah, for years. Yeah. Literally, it was years.
Yeah.
Even after I had my job and I was really secure, I had a second baby, I was still looking over my shoulder.
Did they ever catch these people?
No.
Okay. That story's not done yet.
Well, my trafficker, my last buyer is passed.
Okay. All right. Let me fast forward you to having your first relationship, a date.
Yeah.
So
this is a really cool story, right? My grandmother, when I came home from school one day, said, "Some guy's going to call you." And I thought it was about school. Because I had all kinds of things to do for school. And she said, no, some guy's going to call you. And I said, what are you talking about? She had answered an ad in the Singles Almanac.
Now, Grant, does grandma know your background?
She didn't. She knew I had been abused. They knew. I mean, my mom.
Nowhere to the extent that
No. They knew I was a runaway, but they had no idea.
Okay.
No idea.
All right.
All of the abuse that had gone on.
Sure. And there's more, but go on.
So she had beautiful handwriting. So he found my letter, quote unquote, to be the one that he wanted to answer because of her handwriting. And I have terrible handwriting. But Mark, his name is Mark, he loved the handwriting and he said, I've got to call this girl. So he called me and he gave me his phone number and we talked for a while, but he didn't want anything to do with me. I mean, I was 18, so I was 7 years younger than him. I was on welfare at the time when we first started talking.
Baby.
Yeah, and a baby. And he just...
Living with grandma.
Living with grandma, yeah. He didn't want anything to do with me, really.
But he reached out?
Yeah, but he was bored. He would call me when he was bored. He lived in Newburyport, and the winters are harsh. And so he, when he was bored, he'd call. And so we had about a six-month phone relationship. And then one day in the early part of the summer, I think it was late May, really, he had a cold. And I said, I make a really great chicken soup. And so he came over for chicken soup.
Done.
And, yep. When we opened the door, we both looked at each other and thought, oh, hello.
Oh, man, this is beautiful. Now, all that stuff is, because it's, you're talking and you're meeting and you're having that vibe going on. When does it start hitting you emotionally because of the effects of what you've been through that, you start to get this, this stuff starts to haunt you that he doesn't know about?
He doesn't know about it. We had an on again, off again for 4 years.
Because of you?
Yeah, because I was such a mess.
And you wouldn't tell him?
I didn't know how to tell him. I really, honestly, the early childhood trauma affects your brain. So little kids, when they're traumatized, the trauma is in the mid part of the brain, right in the middle part. And that loops, and it doesn't reach out to the executive reasoning where your language skills develop. So early childhood trauma is very difficult to articulate. And what happens when you have a continuous trauma? So I was traumatized repeatedly throughout my childhood. And then, of course, in my teen years, where your brain is developing that executive reasoning. So even though your language is developed at that point, the early trauma still loops way deep inside and it's difficult to articulate. So it was literally not till I was 25 years old before I could start to really talk to him about what had happened.
I would assume that you would be fearful that if I unveil this stuff to this guy's going to bolt.
There was I also, I just felt unworthy. So I felt like this guy's too good for me.
Yeah.
He's just a nice guy. And maybe he seems like a nice guy and he's not. So there was that trust issue, like you're saying.
Uh-huh. Now, at some point in your life, you had to develop a faith. in God, as you've no problem talking about on here. That must have been a difficult journey because you could have been angry too.
Yeah. Well, at the home front, with Mother's, Marilyn took us on retreats, and we spent time doing things like sitting across a chair from someone who had abused us and talking to them, telling them that we forgive them. Those sort of practices really helped. But there was a lot of difficulty in, like, how could a good God let such terrible things happen?
Of course.
It did take a long time and a lot of Bible study before I recognized the fact that God made the world perfect, but we live in a fallen world now. And so he gave us free will. And that's one of the things I recognized pretty early on, is that he gave each and every person the ability to choose for themselves.
Whether they want to do evil or good.
Whether they want to do evil or good. Whether they want to recognize a person as a person or not. So my mom, when she got pregnant with me, even though it was a brutal rape, she said, we were in it together. So she immediately recognized me as a person, even though I was probably the size of a blueberry, right? A little, as soon as you know you're pregnant. But even that, she chose to believe that I was a person. So, for example, I was listening to your guest on the previous hour, and she chooses not to believe that. So we each have free will. We can do good or we can do bad. And I think that God put all kinds of laws in the universe, just like gravity and just like the way things flow. He put nature nurturing in our DNA. It's in us. But we can choose to use, we can choose selfishness over that. And so just like we can break the law of gravity with lift and thrust and fly in an airplane, we can break the law of nurture and trust by choosing selfishness.
Darlene Pawlik is with us this morning. www.thedarleneprincess.com, D-A-R-L-I-N-G, conceived and raped, trafficked, born again. Now, I want you to tell me about the story when your husband's name's Mark.
Mark, yes.
I want to know, Mark. I have a story to tell you. How was that? Listen, Mark, we got to sit down. We got to have a chat.
Yeah, I don't know that we actually sat.
Did
down
you go little by
one,
little?
Yeah, or? Very little by little. Yeah. Very little
and,
by
and,
little.
And testing to see how he was receiving this stuff or receiving you.
Honestly, I don't know if that was even something that came into my mind. But for example, I would go into a full-on rage. I would be cleaning the house in a rage, and he would just look at me and say, "What is wrong with you?" And I'd stop and I just looked at him and I don't know. And so I had some ladies that I would have prayer times with, and it took a lot of just talking with them and being quiet.
Yeah, because you had so much to deal with that mm-hmm. you didn't. I mean, I guess. We departmentalize stuff when we're children, and everybody knows if you've been a long time on this earth, it's going to face the music at some point in time. Right. But you had your whole being since a child up to a young lady there you had to deal with that you
right.
put aside.
I did have the double life though. When my mom was married to her second husband, we had a normal life there. So it was normal for during the week, and we went to school and we played games, and so. There was that.
You didn't know that, though.
I didn't recognize that.
Right, you didn't recognize that. The other side was what you were more used to.
Well, that was only on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So it was more time during the, ages of 5 to,
right, okay.
to 9 or 10.
Thank God you had that little bit of foundation.
Yeah.
That little bit of foundation. Mm-hmm. You could be completely destroyed after mm-hmm. that. So, yeah, I mean, you started to find out stuff about yourself. Now, did you go to counseling or did you basically just do this to the women of faith that were praying you through it and you were learning?
Right, the women of faith. Well, we got together, we prayed, we talked about
things. That's a powerful testimony. I mean, it's sitting right before me right here. If you see her, you'd never know it. Just sparkling. Let me tell you something. He's restored your youth.
Thank you.
You can see that, huh?
Yeah, just like the scripture says.
Yeah, you keep scaring me. I'm trying to do the math over here going.
51.
What? Are you for real?
Yes, I am.
I got you by a few years. I don't look too bad either, though.
Nope.
Yeah. It's amazing how that happens, huh? Now, when you're talking with your daughters, especially the first one, that's a special baby. You know, not that they're not all. I get that, I was brought up with children as well, brothers and sisters. That one's a special one because everything took place while that baby was in your womb. And have you talked to her?
Oh, yeah. That. She comes to some of my events. Yeah, she knows. Yeah. She read my book. She was one of the first three people to read it.
Right. And you're still a nurse?
I'm not. Actually, I got really, really ill with Lyme disease in 2014. And I had, by 2015, I had to lose.
Tick?
Yeah.
All this stuff this young lady's been through, one tick takes you out with a little disease.
It did.
Was that New Hampshire?
It was here, yeah. I thought I was going to die for over a year.
I'm scared to death.
Years.
I've been bit by those things all the time. I talk about it. I got a dog and I take him out and he gets loaded. They get me. I'm picking him off. I brought them to the health department. They analyzed them. You just never know with that. Now, when did that get you?
Well, I honestly don't know. I've been suffering with pain my whole life, so could have been from when I was a child. No. But it hit me really, really hard at the end of 2014. No. And by 2015, like I said, I left my job. I was having vomiting migraines for months and months. I couldn't move. I was crawling around my house. And I found a doctor in Portsmouth, and I was on antibiotics for close to 20 months altogether, but I was on IV antibiotics for 5.5 months. And the nurses would come to change my dressing, and she would really give me no hope and say, this isn't working for a lot of people. But I had hope, very little, but I had some.
Let's talk a little bit about your husband, Mark. First of all, he's a remarkable man.
He is a wonderful man.
You can tell that already. I don't even know the guy. To go through all that stuff with you in the beginning and then have these little bits and find out that is he the one that maybe encouraged you to go get help, do something? Or was he just constantly being supportive and just standing by you no matter, you know, how did that work out?
Yeah,
did you both decide up to it? Or?
No, he was just wonderful all the way through. Honestly, he didn't know even the full scope until just a few years ago, just till about 2012.
He probably didn't find out until he listened to the show this morning, really. Yeah.
He comes to my events too, though.
All right, so now today you've got five children.
I do.
And then how long you've been married for?
I've been married for 28 years in May.
All right, 28 years. Boy, wow, that's amazing. Now you share your stories of encouragement, healing from that child sexual abuse and the human trafficking side of it. And again, if it's not in the news here, most people don't know about it. And you're doing this all over the place. How bad is this issue here in this state?
It's
I mean, one's bad, but...
Right. Well, since it's illegal, it's hard to track. So, I mean, that's the thing about statistics is because this is illegal and underground, it's going to be impossible to track. There are a number of confirmed cases here in New Hampshire. The last count that I had known about was 19 or 27. I'm not sure which number is correct, actually, because it was during a meeting that so I'm on the New Hampshire Human Trafficking Collaborative Task Force. Yeah. And so the most recent meeting I was at, it was mentioned. But like I said, it's completely underground. And you're not going to see that 14, 15-year-old girl. She's a runaway. Or she's, you know, sneaking out at night and going back home. And those cases are the hardest because the kids are out there on the streets. They're not necessarily in a room somewhere. They may be going to school. They may be going to youth group even. Teresa Flores is a national speaker as well. And she said she went to school and to youth group while she was being trafficked. I attended a few church services while I was being trafficked. I didn't go to school, but I was around the neighborhood. People knew me, saw me, whatever. So you don't know. And the thing about that, the victims don't know their victims. They don't know. I didn't know what trafficking was. I had no idea. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure it was even a term until 2000 when they put in the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And that law really put trafficking as a term on the map for a lot of people. And it's still so hidden. It's just really so hidden.
It's like a dirty word nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Survivor, speaker, advocate, Darlene. Darlene Pawlik is in the studio, and that's why it's www.thedarlingprincess.com. You could check out her speaking engagement. She's got a blog up there as well. Plenty of resources as well. Now, I would think if we're going to give a message to maybe a family that's listening today, well, how do I prevent the youth that I have in my family from getting involved in this? First thing I'm hearing is as a mom and dad, you must put a force field around your child.
Yeah.
It's got to start there because take a look at your upbringing right there. You kind of were able to break out of that fence. Mm-hmm. What do we know when we're young? We just run.
Yeah.
You know, so that structure's got to be there. So more of the education is on how to bring up your kids properly than talking about them running off. Because if you can do that, well, you're going to prevent that type of thing. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think anybody can be vulnerable, though. Sometimes I do talks and I'll talk about just what the vulnerabilities are. And anybody could be vulnerable to human trafficking. You can do all the right things. And
this probably happens with boys too, you know, but not talked about at all.
Right. Mm-hmm. It does happen with boys too. And one of my, I would call him my friend, but I don't know him that well. His name is Elam, and he has "Our Boys Are Not For Sale" is his website or his tagline. And he has way more information on boys than I do. I don't know of that many boys, but statistically, it's more girls than boys, but it is boys. And one of the men that I know that was a trafficking victim said that men buy girls for sex and they buy boys to abuse them. So even though there is a ton of abuse for girls, he said that there's hardly ever any actual sex when it's guys. It's for abuse.
Now, speaking with Darlene earlier in this interview here, we learned that this took place in her neighborhood. The problem now from way back when till now, Darlene, the neighborhood has become the internet now.
Right.
And you know, you've talked about some numbers and they're very difficult to find because of the underworld of it all. I am going to just go on a limb and say, I'll bet you there's more now than there even was when you were young, because look at the fishbowl.
Absolutely. So there are apps like Kick and Yak and those kinds of GPS apps that kids are using, that predators are using. And so they're going to their schoolyards and they're seeing who's on Kick and who's on Yak or the other myriad of social apps out there. And they're using them to track these kids, and they don't know it, but they'll show up at their where they frequent, at the mall, and say, hey, you're on Yak too. You know, I'm on Yak. I'm 14 and whatever. And so they're watching them as they're responding, not knowing that these are older guys or even older women. There are women that traffic people too. But they'll develop a relationship with them and get them to trust them on these apps.
Oh, sure, because it's very difficult to hide an identity that way too. I mean, look, we need the police do it to catch people all the time. Mm-hmm. So the youth, being vulnerable, could think they're talking to another 15, 16-year-old kid. And the other problem is that because of the way the internet is today, you can pinpoint a person where they are.
Right.
Exact address.
Mm-hmm.
Show up at a baseball game, sit in the stands, you wouldn't even go unnoticed. I mean, I just think that it's more apt to happen now than it ever was before. And once they're swooped up, I mean, I'm sure you've taken, look how many missing kids we got.
Right, yeah. A lot of kids do go completely missing.
I mean, there's thousands and thousands mm-hmm. of missing kids. It doesn't get a lot of talk about. And I just think that that's going to increase because of that. So to go with helping to prevent this from happening in our family, the other side of it is now we have got to be aware of what our children are doing on the internet. I mean, you know, there are people today that stay out of their kids' way. I mean, this internet's become a babysitter to them.
Right.
Dangerous world.
Yeah, it is a dangerous world. So I put a couple of posters on my website for parents to download and print out, and for schools. If you're a teenager and you're concerned about your friends, there's some safety tips on there.
On the website. Now, when you are speaking to some of these kids, that's what they're called, or some of them adults probably still, do you talk about how important it is? It's got to be your experience, though, on the faith side of it.
I do, because I believe it's completely demonic. For me, I homeschooled all my kids, so we did a lot of investigating of creation science, that sort of thing, and really weren't able to debunk it at all. And it just strengthened our faith in what has happened. And I strongly believe that there is a God, he created the world, and that there's a devil, and he wants to destroy the world. And so we've got these two opposing forces. And the devil doesn't just want to destroy the earth as the inanimate earth. He wants to destroy people. And the reason he wants to destroy people is because God loves them and because they worship God. And he wanted all the worship for himself. And so he's out to destroy people.
Now, when you met your husband way back when, was he a believer?
He was not a believer.
He was not a believer.
He was just a really great guy.
Yeah. So did he become one?
He did, yes.
Did you guys become at the same time, or was it one after the other?
No, I had been following the Lord and really paying attention to him and going to church, and he'd be out in the kitchen doing the dishes as loud as he could so that he didn't hear them preaching or whatever.
Well, hey, I don't even want to go through. We could spend 3 hours over here of all the scriptures that you've read that have probably come true to your life now, couldn't we?
Yes.
Like, by example, you will lead the other two?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Good stuff with that there. Now, about your children?
They're believers. They were brought up with the Bible every day. That is a miracle. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you've been speaking publicly for more than 10 years, and I'm sure that this is really on your heart to do so, to give back what you mentioned. So, you know, why would somebody book you to speak? Unless we're talking about human trafficking and stuff, why would we want Darlene to come speak? I mean, like, a high school could surely use you.
Yeah.
You know, any place that there's families that have kids, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So you have a schedule that's on the website.
Yeah. So I do a lot of fundraisers for pregnancy centers, resource centers. I believe in the ability for people to help people and get away from our dependence on the government so much. The pregnancy centers are really such a great resource for people. They give so much, and they usually have the ability to put you in touch with people who can help you with housing or other, you know, mother's helpers or various other things. Our pregnancy centers are just doing tremendous work.
You know, it's easy for any of us to say, because you never know who's listening. I always know that there could be somebody listening right now that's entrapped in a place they don't want to be. Mm-hmm. I know that. And it's easy to say, well, you just go get help. But they're so scared to death, they can't move.
Right.
They're petrified. How do you speak into somebody's life? I guess the only thing you do is continue to encourage them to go, mm-hmm. move, right?
Yeah, I actually met a young woman who was in prostitution, and I don't know, quote unquote, whether or not it was by choice. She said she would like to get out, so that's, you know, pretty simple. I don't know how trapped she was, but she said she was worried about the other girls. So there was a group of girls that she was concerned about at the same time. And I said, just whenever you're ready, just give a call. And so, especially if they're adults, you know, you can't go rescue them. You're not rescuing anybody. They have to make the decision for themselves to get out. And it has to be at a point where they are really sure they want to get out. The recidivism rate is pretty high for trafficking victims. They go back, especially if they're young. Because once you get out, you've lived with this incredible soup of adrenaline and norepinephrine and cortisol, these stress hormones rolling around in your body for so long that when you go to a quiet place, everything inside you starts screaming. And so it's easier in a way to live with the stress outside of you than it is to live with the stress inside of you. So that's why a lot of people go back, but it takes time and there is healing, but it's just a really hard thing to get out of.
Oh, for sure. First and foremost is it's getting away from something and quitting cold turkey without having anything to take up that stuff. That's what they call bugging out, man.
Right, yeah. Right. And there are trauma-informed places to go that can help with art therapy and music and things like that.
Darlene Pollock is with us here. www.darlingprincess.com, darlingprincess.com. It has been a delight to meet you.
Thank you.
Very encouraging. No matter what side of life you're on, it's a story that really could have been an ugly way. No doubt about that. Conceived in rape, trafficked, and born again. Now, what about PTSD? You know, in March 2018, we're talking many, many years of your life. A good portion of your life was centered around a horrific emotional battering at a very young, vulnerable age. Do you suffer from any of it today? You've got to have slight flashbacks at it, because if you just got done explaining to me that there's a good and evil, that evil is going to constantly knock at your door.
Right.
You know, it gets easier and easier, I guess, to fight the battle back, but it's always that little, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely there. Oh, yeah.
So what do you do when that stuff starts Yeah. So I mean, I know you've got many years on you right now where it's, you know, you got a lot of this stuff in the bank. You could turn around at it and slap it in the face, but.
That's true.
You know, that but I'm not saying that you're not going to get a little, you know, hey, there's good days, bad days. And some days you're just saying, well, you know what? I tell people that I never have bad days anymore. I have bad moments. And they are not, it's, I know that's going to fly by, but when you're first coming out of that, that's hell.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know which way to go. You're a miracle, and we're glad you're here so you can talk to others, because most people aren't talking about this stuff. But the thing is you got to go into the pits to find these people, man.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Yeah, and but they're there waiting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, wonderful stuff. You're welcome to come back and use the airwaves anytime you want to help spread your message for the positive thing and encouraging parents to, you know, keep that tether on their child.
Yeah.
Emotionally and everything else. I just, you know, we want these people to get caught too, you know. So the police, you know, they're working on that. As we said earlier, the internet is a big haven for this, but we have the police on every Friday. They have a complete unit that's dedicated to this type of stuff.
Right.
Not sure if they use the word human trafficking online or something like that, but it's basically catching predators, and they catch them all the time. They're just not making the news. So, which is also scary because it's still going on. They're catching so many.
It's
more prevalent now than it was before.
Mm-hmm.
So, any types of words of encouragement that you'd like to give, you know, not that you haven't already, but as we, you know, wish you well and see you again.
There's hope and there's prevention. And I hope that by hearing my story, people will recognize that there is a need for prevention and that there is. There's hope out there. If you're in that kind of a situation, there's hope. Everywhere I go, people say, yeah, that happened to me. Yeah, that happened to me. And so it's a lot more prevalent than we know.
Mm. Okay. When's the book coming out?
My second book is coming out.
Did you bring me a book this morning?
Year. You know what? I'm sorry. Oh,
we need a couple of those, okay?
Okay.
I'm sure a listener would like to have one as well. We'd like to give it away. What was the first book called?
The first book was called Testimony, The Dark Side of Christianity, because even though I had been received the Lord as my Savior as a small child, I didn't know anything about following Him. I didn't know what it was like to live in the light of His love.
Mm-hmm. And the second book?
Well, I wrote a portion of Personhood, two chapters in there, and that's on my website also. That's a compilation of a whole bunch of different writers on what personhood means for human beings. And the new book that will be coming out, but I've actually put it on hold. It'll be a rewriting of my original book in more of a narrative, because the way that I wrote it before was more like a almost academic explanation.
You know, one thing we didn't get to this morning, because I wanted to get through your story, was, you know, how we're handling this legally and stuff. And you've been a big part of that. I didn't get to it. So maybe we can have you back on again and talk about the lore of it all.
Okay.
You have a blog, so people can follow you on your website.
Yep.
And you can get a hold of her. She's easy to talk to. Very inspiring and uplifting. Thank you so much for taking a ride here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
www.wsmn1590.com. Darlene Pollack, the website, www.darlingprincess.com. We hit the top of the hour, and you've got Paula Whittier in the house here this morning. Chick Chat Radio on at 11, and we've got Paul Bergeron, Mr. Jim Lawrence on this afternoon. The cams are up all day at WSMN 1590, looking north and south. Mr. O'Brien, thank you for that guest this morning. Great job, as always. Until tomorrow at 6:06 a.m. when I take attendance, I'm George, and I'm out.